The Florida Podcast Network, the voice of Florida.
From Mallory Square in Key West to the Governor's Mansion in Tallahassee and all points beyond, you're listening to the Florida Beer Podcast, powered by FloridaBeerBlog.com. Your source for all things related to the craft beer community in the Sunshine State. And now your host, Dave Butler.
All right, welcome to episode 169 of the Florida Beer Podcast, powered by FloridaBeerBlog.com. This is Dave, your host and author, and if you have not seen on our social media, we just celebrated our 10th anniversary over on FloridaBeerBlog.com. So thank you so much for those of you that continue to read it and comment and just enjoy, because we will continue doing it as long as we are able to. So it's fun. Today's episode is a little bit different because usually we will talk about breweries or other things. I keep the podcast pretty free form. One of the things that I had noticed in South Florida is a growing spate of retailers selling a certain beer called Brewsake. And I will admit that the thing that kind of intrigued me about them was that they explicitly label on their product the perfect companion to sushi and sake, the sake bomb beer. I've never really seen anybody that kind of focuses on that specifically. And so after a little bit of research and a little bit of trial and a little bit of communication, I spoke to Dr. Rob Streisfeld. He is the founder of Brewsake, and the story is a lot bigger than I had anticipated. It's actually kind of interesting. So I'm just going to go ahead and let you listen in to our conversation with Dr. Rob, talking about kind of his background, the background of where they came to be releasing a beer today. And trust me, the beer was not the first thing that they thought of, which I find interesting, and just what it's like to grow a brand in Florida and beyond. So here we are, Dr. Rob Streisfeld with Brewsake. Enjoy. Obviously, we have to talk about the beer. It's a beer podcast. But I'd like to talk about your story, because I find your story to be absolutely fascinating. And it really kind of does give the impetus for how we have arrived at the moment where we are drinking Brewsake and talking about Brewsake.
Where we're going with as a Brewsake, the future of Brewsake coming hopefully this time next year.
Exactly. So give us a little bit of your background, because there's a lot of interesting, I guess, I don't want to say medical, but we'll talk about that.
I have a unique background. I say I wear many hats. I say I'm a modern day Renaissance man. But I did things for the purpose of better living, better quality of life, better day to day experiences. And I went to naturopathic medical school many years ago, mainly because I wasn't feeling well. I had digestive issues. I had skin issues, and I didn't really like the modern or traditional or conventional medicine, allopathic medicine model of here's a pharmaceutical for your symptom. And with that, I was going to school and I wasn't fully knowing what I was getting into when I went out there, but it brought me a lot of Eastern culture, Eastern medicine, which is like traditional Chinese medicine, acupuncture, brought me to a lot of herbalism and how powerful plants are and the different components that they carry. Then wasn't really aware of all that growing up in New York and the East Coast mentality. And when I was in med school is when I was doing a lot of sushi lunches or sushi dinners, you know, something quick, grab and go, eat and go. And that's where I really first started doing sake bombs very early.
So it really did, I hate to say this, but it really did start with a college level enjoying to get alcohol into you as much as humanly possible. And if you've never had a sake bomb, it is kind of fun. Yeah, let's be honest.
It was a grad level, but at the same time, yeah, we were working hard. Mm-hmm. We were studying a lot. You're in medical school, and we're also next to Arizona State University, so a lot of partying going on at ASU. So we had no limitations of friends that wanted to join us in celebrating. And we just found that, you know, to blow off a little steam, that it wasn't just getting drunk. That wasn't our goal. We were in medicine, but we wanted to have fun and enjoy the experience. And, you know, we didn't know the whole story of sake bombs and so forth, but the place we'd go to for lunch or for dinner had a big gong behind the sushi bar. And the guy was a lot of fun. And he would have the whole restaurant line up the sake bombs on the chopsticks, just up the little sake glass. And he would scream 1, 2, 3 and bang the gong. And the whole place would erupt. The whole place would slam the tables, down the drink, cheers, kenpai. And it was so much fun that when I came back home to Florida to visit the folks, visit my brother, younger brother, I had to, you know, we had to do it out for dinner. And I said, have you done this? So we started doing that. And that was really what started the conversation.
You know. Gotcha. And what was interesting about the conversation is not so much, hey, sake bombs are good, but obviously sake bombs are good, but you kind of took an interesting spin on it, which I have never, it's never really left my brain about how potentially unsanitary a sake bomb could be if you really sit and think about it.
You know, I was studying pathology, microbiology, you know, all the nitty gritty, you know, bugs that are out there and dirt and all that stuff. And then I'm going to do these sake bombs and I'm taking this shot glass off the table with my hands on it, putting it on the chopsticks, slamming it, putting it into my glass, drinking it, then grabbing my hands in there, pulling it back out, putting it back on the table, repeat, repeat, repeat. And I was like, there's gotta be a more, like I said, sanitary or more refined way of doing or sharing in this experience. And that's part of what my father, who's been a serial inventor and entrepreneur his whole life, we've had products on QVC, we've had product companies go public. He's just been, you know, a hardworking inventor entrepreneur. And my brother, who has a background in the bar, you know, restaurant scene in South Florida, Miami, from Nikki Beach to some of the hottest clubs. And, and we're both going, yeah, what can we do? And that was the impetus to Brewsake. That really was.
Because really the only other beverage that I can think of where you're putting a glass in a glass would be a Boilermaker, which is in essence the whiskey version of a sake bomb.
Jaeger. We do Jaeger bombs.
Well, yeah.
I actually just read an article came out not too long ago that had like 10 or 20 shots in beer cocktails.
Yeah.
So it's not the only one, but I mean, I think it's the most fun. I think if you're yelling sake, 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 and you're banging the table.
Exactly. But part of the sake bomb experience is the glass on the chopsticks. You bang the table so that the shot glass, which people have touched on the outside, right, goes into your beer. How do you replicate the experience but maintain sanitization so nobody's touched and it's not on an awful, disgusting South Beach bar top?
Well, and that's exactly what we went to Endeavor. And my father and I, and mostly my father, had conceived this cap, this unique cap delivery system that would hold a pod of some sort on top of the bottle of beer where you can still have the experience of slamming that cap down like a plunger of sorts.
Okay.
And, you know, still have that experience and have that end result of a cocktail or that mixed, you know, that drink. And literally we conceived it, we had all these ideas, and then it kind of sat in the wayside for a bit until a few years back when my dad went back into his lab, aka garage, whatever you want to call it, and he started working with engineers, and we have now a patented cap system that'll hold a Keurig style coffee pod,
okay,
which will hold our sake and hopefully other branded sakis and maybe even other spirits above a bottle of beer, and it'll provide that experience. We'll still be able to, you know, turn the top, wind up the dragon head, slam it really hard, and still have that experience without the mess, the fuss, and also the components. So when you're traveling, we're going to have this as a turnkey solution. So when you're out at a bar, when you're out or bringing it home, it'll all be a one turn system, all available. So you don't have to, oh, I don't have chopsticks, or do you have sake glasses, or the whole missing pieces. And I've actually seen, and again, I will still do sake bombs. Don't get me wrong. Okay. I am still a fan. I have a beer right now. You know, Brusaki's out there and we're going out and doing sake bomb promotions at restaurants, and we're having a lot of fun doing sake bomb parties and love it. So I'm not knocking it 100%. I'm just saying there are going to be those circumstances where, you know, an alternative is available, and that's what we're bringing to the table.
So I'm kind of envisioning
I guess, like a bottle of Ramune or marble soda, where you take the cap, which is in the bottle anyways, you push it down to sort of open it. This is meant to be like that in that it's disposable. It's a one-time use. You've pushed it and it's...
It is. It can be a one-time use, but my background in natural medicine and sustainability, we've designed the cap to be made out of a biodegradable, recyclable material. So plant-based, nope, not a plastic, not a lot of waste, as well as reusable. We decided that we want to make this cap. If someone buys a cap, we might have them preloaded with our pods. You might make sleeves of pods available, or you may want to put your own spirit pod of a different type in that cap over a different beer. We're not going to exclude it, but we wanted to prove the concept, and that's what we're doing with Brewsaki. We're going to be, you know, coming out with this either later 2024 or early 25. And once that's in the market, people are going to experience it, you know, see what it's like. And, you know, we're fluid, you know, just like a beer. We're going to, you know, always change. Like originally, we didn't think about the plastic aspect. But while we're developing, we're like, you know what, this would be that much better, biodegradable, recyclable, and reusable. Just like our tap handles, which I think you've seen. Everyone told me we have a great design on our tap handle. Everyone said, oh, you got to send that design out to China. 4 or 5 months, they'll send it back to you, blah, blah, blah. I said, that's it? That's my option? And I said, that's not acceptable to me. Nope, I found a company in Minnesota, the local US-made company working with wood and acrylic, and they make my handles now. And every time I buy a handle from them, they plant a tree.
That's cool.
And that was more the mindset I wanted to bring to this company, a more full circle conscious way of being.
Gotcha. But that's interesting because, you know, we're talking about tap handles and we're talking about beers that are coming on right now, but you're talking previously, like the idea was this delivery system, the sanitized, hopefully reusable delivery system for a shot in beer kind of beverage. There's a big jump between creating a package and creating the actual beverage that goes inside the package. So as I hold up my tall boy of Brewsaki, how did we get to this point? We have a fluid that's in the market right now. Take us here.
Well, that was it. My dad had gotten this patent and I said, that's great job, but how are you going to bring this in the market? You know, it's not, you have to show how it works. And we've always been, just going back to the origin of the story, big Asian, Japanese food consumers. And I've traveled all over the country and beyond, and I eat sushi a lot. And I find the same beers in every restaurant.
Sapporo or Kirin or Asahi.
That's it. Maybe a Budweiser and Corona, you know, depending on where you're located. But that's about it for the majority of restaurants. And we said, look, there's an opportunity there to make a good quality Japanese-style rice lager to compete in that specific market. And we have. We have made a delicious Japanese-style rice lager. We crafted it to be gluten-reduced. There goes a little bit more of my health background. Yeah, exactly. I want it to be, you know, gluten-friendly. And not only is the cap, I'm excited about the cap, but I'm right now very excited about the beer, the branding. We have a huge, gorgeous dragon on the cover of our logo, which people want to buy the handles. They want to buy our shirts. And it just happens to be Year of the Dragon right now in the Chinese calendar, which doesn't hurt.
Yeah, exactly.
Beer, I am not from a beer manufacturing or brewing background. I openly admit that. My background is science, though, and I formulated many products, you know, from green juice powders to help with formulations of multivitamins. So I understand the science of formulation, and I always defer my ego to someone that has a little more experience.
Gotcha.
That's what drove me down the pipe to Miami to a Shojo Beer Co. And H. Hadar and, you know, had come out with a really couple nice craft Japanese style beers. And I really liked what he had done. And no knocking, it was like, hats off, but I'd like to tweak it. I had a little different end result in mind, you know, end product. And I'm designing mine to go scale to national, hopefully international, mainstream approach, not just micro brew craft kind of marketing. And I worked with him. I contracted H and he helped us get our recipe dialed in. And I always, you know, respect that and appreciate him. He's got his Shojo, you know, brewery now in Sake Lounge in Miami, doing great. And we've done events there. We brought our kegs down and we've done in collaboration. If you go to Total Wine, we're in all the Total Wines in Florida. We're a bunch of Whole Foods. If you read the description of Total Wine, it still says in collaboration with Shojo Beer Co.
That's kind of amazing.
And Because again, you acknowledge those that helped you get along the way. I have no knock on that, and it's. But we've tweaked it since then, you know. And yeah. I love the beer, and that's the most important thing for me is when people grab the beer for the first time. They this is really good. They're surprised yeah. how light but flavorful it might be. Go ahead.
And this is really step one in the further thing. Yeah. So you've got the beer, you've got the idea, and what I find interesting, and you sort of mentioned it because obviously the visual aspect of the beer and the Brewsaki logo is actually very inviting, but you've also mentioned already that you're very proud of the fact that it's made here, not just in the United States, but here in the state of Florida. Why did you decide to go for a more Oriental Asian style iconography than something that's a little bit more Florida based?
Well, we wanted to build, we're here local in Florida. We really believe in the local, you know, option. We also know that Florida is a large market. And we feel that if we can own this market, we can penetrate this market, do really good and establish our brand here in Florida. Obviously, I'm a New Yorker. If you couldn't hear the accent, you know, I want to go up to New York and the Northeast. But I see this going huge in a lot of markets, from Vegas, especially California. Vancouver is the top sushi city in the United States. So can't wait to get to the pack, you know, Northwest. But we wanted to be mainstream. I went and did a lot of research on can art and craft beer, and we decided to go a little bit outside the norm. Number one is I wanted art that you can know exactly what it is, recognize the brand, and understand what you're going to be consuming. A lot of great art out there, can art, but a lot of times you don't know what the name of the beer is, what's inside the can, and that's not how I wanted to build my brand. And number two is I saw a lot of companies of craft breweries opening up tap rooms, big breweries, a lot of overhead, and that wasn't our motto. We're not coming out with 8-10 different types of beer. This is our beer. We have plans. So that's phase one. We have to give a great foundation, the beer. Phase two is we're going to launch, and hopefully that'll be, we're looking to launch by October, which is National Sake Day or World Sake Day, October 1st. So we're hoping to launch by October our own line of sake, as well as partnerships and cross brands with other really quality existing sake brands for that component to really have the great beer sake companionship, which is how this beer was originally designed. And then, of course, that leads into phase three, which is the full cap system, the Brewsaki Sake Bomb Brew.
Now, we should probably state that even though this is, you know, as I'm looking at the can, the perfect beer for sake bombing, this is not a canned cocktail. There is no actual sake in this. This is meant to be the beer component of the sake bomb.
That's great and a good point. However, it's rice-based, so there is that great consistency. You get a natural sweetness from the fermented rice. There's no corn syrup added to our formula at all. It's a very clean formula. But yeah, that's, again, a little misconception at first, but I don't mind explaining to the consumer or who's people out there what our vision is. And when they see the mock-ups of the full system, they go crazy. They want to know, can we get this now? But yes, I mean, that was really the challenge. Could I modify the labeling? I don't want to. I think we have done a great job. Of course, I'm biased here, but it's also coming from doing a ton of tastings and Total Wine and doing beer festivals.
Well, that's a great, like, you've got this product, you've got the IP, you're ready to go. Where was the first step? Because you've mentioned beer festivals, you've mentioned sushi restaurants, you've mentioned places like Total Wine. Who was the first place that you went to and says, like, if we're going to do this, they're the people that need it first?
Well, that's a little bit of a tricky story. Once we got the beer produced, we did a first test run, which was, we considered an R&D proof of concept run. I wasn't trying to go huge. It's a crawl, walk, run mentality for when I build brands, and I've done this before.
Yeah.
And we got very fortunate to align with Sushi Sake. When we first came out of the box,
she's like the big South Florida based sushi restaurant chain.
Rapidly expanding, looking to franchise. Great spot, you know. And we went out there and you know, we learned, you know, this is a learning curve. We learned about distribution. We learned about, you know, how to educate the consumer on premise. And we're still learning. It's always going to be an evolution, you know, process. But you know, and we learned and we had some hiccups. That's any startup. If you know, my belief is you got to be able to pivot. You know, nothing goes perfectly smooth. It's a roller coaster ride starting up a brand like this. And we've definitely had our ups and downs, but we've been able to pivot and continue to move forward. So we got Sushi Sake, we got established, and the feedback was really good. Then, of course, the next big was Total Wine. And Total Wine has us in the Florida craft section, in all the Total Wines in Florida. Obviously, some markets, some stores are more about the beer, you know, than others. But Once we get out there, we do the sampling, we do the tastings, we get great feedback. The staff is one thing. I love the staff at Total Wine. They're so supportive, you know, even if they're not big drinkers. And I want people, if you've ever done a tasting at Total Wine, staff is really, really great, but they're not allowed to swallow or consume while they're working.
Gotcha.
So they can taste it, whether it be, it's more common you do like a whiskey or a tequila, you taste it, you spit it maybe. Mm. You know, it's really weird to see someone taste your beer and then spit it back into the cup.
Yeah.
But even with that, they give us great feedback. So, I mean, I prefer people to not only drink it and swallow more than spit it, but that's been really a foundation for us. We've built a lot of on-premise. You know, our local sushi spot in Boca Raton, Sushiyama, has us on the menu. That's mm-hmm. where we'd go on a regular basis. And it's so nice to see that as a local business supporting another local business.
Yeah.
That's really where we feel proud, you know?
So obviously, sushi restaurants are going to be the natural place to go. Are you going to limit yourself to just sushi restaurants, or is this something where you're going to start trying to go into bigger locations, Ale House, Tap 42?
We've already been in conversations. It's exactly right. I conceived this product for sushi, sake, you know, that was really the kind of concept. But in this, I would say less than a year in the marketplace, we've gotten such a great response and feedback from a wide range. We did a golf tournament. We were up at 8:30 in the morning on the 18th hole, day drinking, and it was so light and refreshing that they loved it. They said, this is something I could drink. I see people on the plenty in Florida, take it to the beach or by the pool or on the boat. Yes, we've had in been World of Beer, and we sold 2 1.6 kegs, you know, sixtals in 2 weeks. Because it was just a good beer. That's what I want to take away from that, was that it wasn't just to enjoy with sushi or sake. And I appreciate you saying that, is that we found that my wife was like, it's good with a burger, it's good with a steak, it doesn't matter. And, you know, World of Beer, Rock and Brew is bringing us in. We're talking to Tap 42. Yeah, it's a much wider opportunity now than I even thought of. Even though it's that Japanese style, it does not limit us just to Japanese restaurants. And that's really exciting, you know, not only for me, to see where we can go. Like I was just saying, there's a new sports bar opening up in Delray Beach this weekend called Bounce. And it's an awesome place. I've been to the one in New York and they have one in Chicago. And I'm pretty confident we're going to be in Bounce. And to be in a sports bar is like, you know, maybe they'll do sake bombs. Maybe they'll have some sort of sushi on the menu. I don't even know, but it doesn't matter. This is not limited to. While I do want to take a piece of the market share from Sapporo and Kirin Asahi, that's obviously my target. Putting a good beer out there is first and foremost. And I think we've done that. And that's what makes me really proud.
Awesome. And how has it been reaching out to the average beer consumer, or maybe even the consumer that's somewhat interested in beer, but they're not quite the connoisseur that most, you know, snobs would be. I don't want to use that word.
No, it's a great, because we get a lot of those. We go to beer festivals and we go obviously to Total Wine, and you can tell some people break out their Untappd, you know, and they just start rating and they have all this. And I love that. I mean, I love anyone that's got that kind of commitment or at least interest in it. It's a hobby, whatever. We did the event, the Vero Beach Beer and Wing Fest. And there was a lot of people there that were, it's also home brewers were invited. And I thought that was really cool. So, but what I love is seeing that person who says, I'm not really a beer drinker. You know, I'm not really into beer. And they try it because, you know, they try it anyway. And they go, wow, this is really good. Yeah, I could drink this. And that to me is really success. It's not getting the craft beer connoisseur necessarily. Yes, I want their thumbs up. No question.
Yeah.
This is definitely not an IPA, which most people get like, is an IPA? They ask me, they're a little bit concerned. I'm like, no, it's not. But here it's made from rice. Some people have never even heard of a rice-based beers. So I love introducing that concept, you know. And yeah, the feedback across the board has been really great. And that to me, again, as someone who's supported other people's brands, I promote other products, I've built products before, but to sit behind that table and just see the genuine response to the beer, the taste, the flavor, everything, the packaging, that's why I'm doing this. I'm grinding all the time.
And I find the packaging to be interesting. And it's something that you've mentioned before, is that this is very enticing. Do you usually have this, the image, the iconography, is sort of that visual weenie that draws people in first? Or do you have to try to bring people in when it comes to selling them on the basics of the beer and what the product is going to taste and the experience is going to be like?
Truth be told, it's a lot of the logo. I mean, people love this dragon. I mean, we're going to come out with, we have temporary tattoos and stickers, and, you know, people already want our tap handle for their collections. We're really getting a lot of that request. We're going to be updating the website shortly to add e-commerce and merchandise type stuff. But yeah, but it's interesting that that's what draws them in. And then when I get to tell them, because they're not sure what they're getting right off the bat, but when I recognize, oh, have you had a Sapporo? Have you had a Kirin? They're so commonplace, meaning people are familiar with them already, that there's very little hesitation to say, oh, I'll give this a try. And truth be told, they typically love it. And that's really been, you know, the draw. You know, the sake, the name Brew Sake is also drawing a lot of people. I had one good review, if you go on YouTube, when the guy was reviewing my beer and he kept saying, it's not brewski, it's brewsaki. And again, I love a good cold brewski, but let's make it a brewsaki if you're going to have one. That's how I refer.
That makes sense. That's funny.
The other thing that I get a lot of is we go to these brew festivals and we go, oh, what do you have? Oh, this is all you have? This is just one beer? And I keep saying to them, if you make a good one, that's all you need. You know, I mean, you don't need to have 10, 12 different varieties. I'm not knocking breweries. I think there's great variety coming out of breweries. There's a lot of good sours I tasted. You know, there's some unique stuff. I've even seen a few other rice beers come out.
I was just going to say, there's a lot of rice beers in on Florida Beer Blog. I've had a lot of rice lagers that have come down the pipeline from a lot of different places, Gainesville, Miami, they're all kind of up there right now. It's been interesting to watch the growth of that specific style, especially now as a lot of beer drinkers are starting to gravitate more towards a simple lager. In fact, somebody just had a lager fest not too long ago. Are you ever concerned that this style is now starting to increase in popularity, or is that exactly what you were hoping for?
I'm not really concerned in the sense of competition in regards. I appreciate it that there's a category acknowledging that this is a good type of beer to make, a rice-based lager, and it's very consumer-friendly, which I like. But I'm a branding guy, and I know our brand is strong. I know that we have a very specific concept to get to that delivery system and the sake bombs. I think there's a lot of regional breweries and a lot of, you know, good craft microbreweries type of things going on, and that's always a good scene to be part of or support. But as far as something that's going or intended to become a national mainstream beer alternative, like, people did not know Stella, you know, how long ago. It was a newer beer. Yeah. Even Yuengling is not around. I mean, it's a very well-known beer now, but from a mainstream awareness, it hasn't been that long. And So I do believe that Brusaki has that potential to become that recognized national mainstream type of brand. And that's what I'm going after. And that's really where I think we differentiate a lot, is that is our goal from the ground up. And that's kind of what I believe we can attain. And again, we also bring a very uniqueness that I think we're one of the few beers brewed here in the United States and Florida that has potential export interest for Japan or Asian markets in general, which I think is really cool and attractive, that we can bring an American brew back there to Asia versus just enjoying the Asian beers here.
Which is funny because, and you've mentioned this before, that with some of the beers, like if I were to go to Total Wine and buy a Sapporo, that Sapporo was not brewed in Japan.
Right.
That Sapporo was brewed. In fact, I think they do have, you know, Anheuser-Busch as their partner over here in the United States.
Yeah, that's one of the things that a lot of consumers don't know. And they're surprised when they're informed that that Japanese import is imported from maybe Ontario, Canada, or made in Wisconsin or California, but it's not being brought in from Japan. So with that in mind, I really say, look, they're not bad beers. I drank them for many years, but if I have a choice, if I go to a sushi restaurant and there's the same old Sapporo or Kirin, and I see a local Brusaki, I'm tending to lean towards giving the local a try at least. And with that, we've got a lot of people saying, this is now my preferred beverage when it comes to that category. And that's what I love. We also recently signed up with ATAC, which is the American Asian Trade Council of sorts. They have a network of almost 90,000 convenience stores around the United States.
Interesting.
Over 3,500 of them in Florida alone. Hmm. And they were very excited. You have to go through the board. You have to be vetted. It's not just pay to play. You have to really be approved by them. Very excited to be able to get approved by their board, to be, you know, participating in that, and to be now hopefully available very soon in convenience stores around Florida, as well as Total Wine and Whole Foods, and of course a bunch of restaurants all over the place.
Awesome. So I guess from a growth standpoint, you've obviously got your on-premise consumption routes, you've got your sale package sale routes, and then you've got the, I guess we'll call the equipment growth route, which is probably going to be the most important for a company that's in your kind of standing at this point in the growth. Do you really try to focus on a convenience store model or trying to get into restaurants and tap handles and things of that nature?
I believe it's a multi-channel opportunity. I want to meet people. I want to connect with consumers where they're at, where they're buying. And just like at Whole Foods, many of the ones in Florida have us in a cooler right next to the sushi bar, you know, so we kind of connect the dots right there. And then they see that if they're buying, bringing sushi home or whatever night, if they're going out to a restaurant, ideally we get on their menu and we're actually there. We have table tents. We actually offer a lot of these restaurants that will make custom table tents for them, because it's important to educate this consumer on this new product. But I don't think that one is limited to any other. I think that we really have created a model where we have a major liquor or alcohol retailer in Total Wine, a major grocery in Whole Foods, a major, you know, on-premise opportunity with Japanese restaurants and Asian restaurants, as well as World of Beers and Taps and those brewery-focused type of opportunities. And then, of course, the convenience store is a backbone. So we want to drill this in Florida. We're about to push a whole bunch of marketing with radio and iHeart. And now that, but I've seen this happen, and I've done this as a consultant. I've seen people spend a lot of money on marketing and advertising, and there's no product out there. So while I wanted to promote this further, and maybe some of the retailers are looking for more volume, now is when we can actually promote it, because it's actually product. If you hear about this on the radio and you go, okay, now I want to go into the store and buy it, and they don't have it, that's not very promising. So now that I have it in those locations, I can now support that with education, advertising, marketing. And this is the model that I look to really push forward in Florida, as well as we have some nightclubs in Miami. They're talking about making this kind of a VIP package where they'll offer, you know, our beer plus sake, and they'll do the sake bombs as a special thing. And I think that's awesome. And you'll be seeing more and more of that, hopefully in the next 6 months, towards next season, you know, next winter. So it's exciting.
Now, of course, we have to talk about the 800-pound green gorilla in the room when we talk about package sales and a certain grocery chain that is pretty big here. When do you start that conversation? How does that even get started? Because I know a lot of breweries have spent a lot of time, years, in fact, trying to work with Publix and haven't necessarily gotten anywhere.
I'm pretty confident. I think we've gotten approached recently. Sprouts, again, another health-minded, you know, grocery chain that has sushi in many of them. Yes,
I love Sprouts.
I aspire for my brand to be in a cooler right next to the sushi in Publix. That is definitely a goal of mine, and I hope that we see that through fruition in the next few months. Obviously, having Whole Foods bringing that in and take that on first, you know, may draw some interest from Publix. Of course, I think obviously driving sales is number one. Everyone's metrics are you selling the product? So those that are listening out there, go out there and support us as a local business. Buy some brew sake. Talk to your local Publix, you know, buyers or your departments and say, why aren't you carrying this? But yeah, that's really the 800-pound gorilla in the area. You know, we are starting to look at distribution in Georgia, simply because that's really where Publix reaches up to. Mm-hmm. And but at the end of the day, we're just going to stay focused. We have a great beer out there right now and available. We have a great brewery producing our beer.
I was just going to say, because obviously these are big plans. You've got your fingers in a lot of different pots. Do you have, and there are a number of producers or a number of contract brewers that are here in the state of Florida. You went with Brew Theory based in Orlando. Yep. Why were they kind of the right ones for you?
Well, there was a couple of reasons. One, they came in and worked with us and actually helped us with our gluten reduced factor, which I really appreciated, because it's something that I really wanted to have, a gluten free or gluten reduced offering. And they also have a facility up in the Northeast in Massachusetts.
Really?
Yeah. So as we build, Florida is our focus. But when we're ready to move to another market, which going up to the Northeast seems very logical, you know, the Northeast, New York, Boston, New Jersey, all those areas, that we now have a facility right there that'll actually keep us consistent and that'll help us support our goals of penetrating the East Coast.
Okay, that's so they're not having to you're not having to ship the beers from Florida up to New York. You have somebody up there that can make it.
I want it to be, you know, carbon friendly on that level. You're shipping a lot of liquid weight and shipping costs are very high these days. And so again, if we can make it, you know, locally or more local, that's obviously a benefit to us. However, regardless of that, we know that Brew Theory can handle scale. So we wanted to be able to tell someone, we need X number of, you know, barrels produced. They could say we can do it. And that was really what we went and with that decision. We've actually been approached by a couple South Florida breweries recently asking to see if they want, if we wanted to go with them for contract brewing. But I am very, you know, content with Brew Theory. They're doing a great job. And, you know, those are things that you're always going to have that, you know, consideration, whether it be distribution or brewing factor, if you're not doing all your own. But no, we're very content with that. And, you know, yeah, we see a scalability model. And, you know, I give a shout out. We did our first R&D batch, our test run with in Doral with Prison Pals. And if anyone knows Prison Pals, they're blowing up.
Yeah, great, great people. We've had them on the podcast a few times, actually.
They're blowing up. They're doing their thing. And for someone like myself, who's helped build a lot of businesses, mostly in the vitamin natural product space, but understand what building a brand is all about, they're very focused on Prison Pals. And if I want to get in the tanks and they're so busy with their production that I can't get my product made, there's no hard feelings there, but it's not how I can run a business or build this brand. So we, you know, shook hands in good terms, which again, much respect, and a couple of their beers I truly love. I'm building a brand and I'm building a business like this. This is what I wanted to accomplish, and Brew Theory really provides that resource. There are several other good breweries here in Florida offering contract brewing, so I'm not negating them. But we're very comfortable where we're at. Our recipe is dialed in.
Yeah.
And now we're ready to, like I said, that crawl, walk, run mentality. We're just getting out of that crawl stage.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's like, really? You've done this and that? I'm like, we're still infants. We know that. We have no ego. We have a ways to go, but we have the direct focus. We have the strategy. We have a great beer and amazing brand.
So I guess if somebody is interested in trying Brew Psyche for themselves, what's the best way that they can find how to get it near them?
Realistically, you know, we just tell people Total Wine, Whole Foods, those are the, you know, the retail stores that are out there.
Those are statewide, right?
Yep, statewide.
Okay.
I'm not sure if every Whole Foods has it yet because it's under specialties, but they're bringing it in. And of course, if you ask for it, that's obviously going to help us out and we appreciate it. But that was our number one, is that brick and mortar retailer to have it on a regular basis. And then we tell people, look, we go to these beer festivals. We're like, if you have a favorite sushi spot, if you have your go-to restaurant that you hit up all the time that you love, I'm like, you let them know that you're looking to say, hey, you guys should offer a local beer, a good local beer that's not just, and not knocking those, another IPA, but a good beer that's also in the category or vein of Asian culture, Asian food. And that to me is a win, you know, and that I think the restaurant benefits because they can offer a new alternative. The consumer loves to have that option. And, you know, that's how we're going to grow. We're going to grow organically. As I said, we're going to start doing some more radio and some other things. We're going to have some really cool, you know, on-premise promotions, and we're gonna start doing some giveaways on our social media. So those that are listening, follow us on Instagram and all those other great platforms. But that's it. Where I've seen a lot of brands fizzle because they try to do too much too quickly. We've been asked to come to other cities, other markets with our beer, and I'm holding back. I'm holding back because A, I'm here in Florida. I'm the guy that's out there beating the streets. I'm out there. If you're going to a tasting, it's usually me with myself, my wife, or someone else. It's not going to be that way forever, but as long as I can, I like being involved on the ground level. The beer festivals, I love meeting the people, and that's how we're connecting. We're really that, we're going to be national, international, but we're starting with that local root basis. And I think that any good brand, you know, you got the one in Fort Lauderdale that's grown up so big.
Funky Buddha?
Funky Buddha, yeah. I mean, they didn't grow up overnight. It took them a while, and we understand that. And we're just going to make it work. And I just tell people, try the beer, give it a shot, and, you know, give me feedback. You know, I mean, I'm not you know, I have no ego here. We just created a really good product that I'm proud of. And yeah, I mean, I love the, we can't wait to see people carrying, walking on the beach in Brusaki tank tops and hats and whatever it might be. Who knows where it's going to go.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
No, thanks for having me and all the support you give, not just to my brand, but to the, all the local Florida beer brands and getting those consumers out there know more about these companies. It's really important. And we'll be back. This is just the beginning of us.
Awesome. Thank you.
So there we are with Brusaki. I can say that it's not difficult to find them, not only in restaurants around the area, but they are starting to get a lot more package traction, and hopefully things will just continue to grow from here. So definitely follow them on social media. Definitely see what you can do about getting some, because it is quite a tasty rice lager. Next week, we will be doing some fun stuff. There are a number of really great episodes that are in the can or about to be recorded. And trust me, we got some really, really fun conversations that are coming up on the podcast. In fact, I think next week we're going to start episode 1 of 2 of a brewery that has been around almost as long as the blog has. They've been in the news for a couple of interesting reasons, and they've got a whole heck of a lot going on. So I will let you know who that is next week. If you want to find out, the best thing to do is to follow us on social media. If you are on Blue Sky, Threads, Instagram, or X, we are at Florida Beer Blog. Facebook's the different one. We are at FL Beer Blog on there. We're always on the internet at floridabeerblog.com and floridabeerpodcast.com. And you can always email us at floridabeerblog@gmail.com. When you go on to floridabeerpodcast.com, you'll find out very easily that we are also a part of the Florida Podcast Network, a growing and amazing group of Florida-grown, Florida-based podcasts that you definitely need to listen to. So you can find them at floridapodcastnetwork.com. If you are listening to us on a podcasting app, whether it be Apple Podcasts or iHeartRadio, I think we're on YouTube, we're on Libsyn, we're on all sorts of great things. Definitely like us, subscribe to us, and if you can, leave us a good 5-star review. It does help us get the word out about our show. Our intro announcer is Jeff Brozovich. Field producer is Steve Piccola. Executive producer for the Florida Podcast Network and Grand High Poobah is Jemmy Lagagnier. This is Dave, your host and author. Thank you so much, and we will see you next week. Have a great day and drink Florida Craft.